from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. It's a hump day edition, Dominic, and back from building a network, engineering an entire radio network. He's slumming it with the Devil's Advocates today. It's Fancy Brian Kelly. How you doing, Fancy?
Hey, Brian.
Pass the Grey Poupon, my friends.
Welcome back, man.
Yeah, welcome back. Thank you for having me. I don't know how this thing works, but I'm going to try.
We'll figure it out. Just hit the buttons. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm just blah, 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 blah. It's fine.
Very excited to be doing a radio show. And Fancy Brian and Dominic. I think it's going to be at least a fair to middling show today.
Keep your expectations low. That way they will always be met. Brian, good to see you. Crudy, our fair audience. Big show today.
It is. At least a fair to middling. Big show. Charles Franklin. You know, I get giddy when there's new polling out. Charles Franklin, Marquette University pollster. He's joining us at 4:30, a little bit later in the hour, going inside the numbers. But, Dom, I got to tell you, there's some troubling numbers.
I know. Oh, God, no.
Right now, they've got Rojo. Top line, although it's very, very confusing, the metrics. I can't wait to press our pal, Charles Franklin. But apparently, on the certain to vote, it looks like, what? Our boy, Ron Johnson, more accurately, your boy, Ron Johnson, what? Is up 6 on Mandela Barnes.
Johnson supported by 52%. Barnes is the choice of 46%. My math says, yes, that is 6. And that's among likely voters, Crudy. In September, among likely voters, Johnson was 49 and Barnes was 48.
But what about amongst registered voters? Like, you use other metrics. Hell, there's one metric. Mandela's up like 15. I'm like, how can both of these things be true? Like the less enthusiastic voters. So there's this undercurrent of Mandela support, but they're just not sure if it's worth, showing up at the ballot box on November 6th.
Likely voters, again, Barnes 46, Johnson 52. Amongst registered voters in this most recent Marquette poll, Barnes and Johnson are tied at 47.
And there's one other metric. Look a little bit harder. It's something about less enthusiastic voters, basically those that are less clear that they're going to vote. I swear to God, he's up by Rojo on like 15. Jake Edwards took note. It's on our Twitter stream. Someone should check our Twitter at Devil Radio. Do you tweet us? Do you tweet us? Dom does most of the tweeting, primarily profane tweeting on behalf of the panel.
That has a tendency to happen.
Where is it? I'm looking for it here. Anyways, this is, where is it? Damn it. You think I'd do a little more prepping before, I got.
I got one here. Table 9 from the Marquette Law polling here. Under certainty of voting, absolutely certain of voting, Barnes 46, Johnson 52. Less than certain, Barnes 51, Johnson 31.
Say that again.
So among voters less than certain to vote, Barnes leads by 20, 51 to 31.
Well, then I underestimated the underlying support amongst those that just aren't sure if it's worth, voting. I mean, only democracy at stake, folks.
Only democracy at stake. So turnout will be very important because the majority of those who are less likely to vote, apparently, would vote for Barnes.
Did I also understand that Tony Evers is up modestly over Michaels in this newest polling, Tom?
The governor's race has tightened to a toss-up. Again, among likely voters, 47% support Evers, 46% support the Republican challenger, Michaels. The independent, Joan Beglinger, she dropped out in September. She was chosen by 4%, but she will remain on the November ballot.
Dominic, again, using that crazy metric, among those less certain to vote, Tony Evers is at 45%, Tim Michaels 26%. And the, I'm not sure if it's worth it, the Democrats lead by 19 or 20, depending on the race. But the, I'm absolutely certain the last election was stolen, we're going to stick it to Tony Evers and Mandela Barnes. They are, you know, if you look at those express that they are absolutely going to vote. Well, those people are what? Favoring Rojo by about 6.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. Crazy. Also, a little bit later in this big show, Dom, in the happier 5 o'clock happy hour, we're going to welcome back Civic Media CEO, my partner, Sage Weil. And we're going to talk expansion and maybe even dark money, political spending. You know, because suddenly this little network's got a few quandaries. You know, we're struggling. We're agonizing over the right way to handle certain aspects of the political cycle. So we're going to think aloud for you in the 5 o'clock hour. And Dom's going to be very contrarian because he doesn't have a dog in the fight.
I mean, someone's got to be here, man. I'm happy to do it for you.
Well, you can be there to smack talk me and Sage. The guy's actually doing the heavy lifting, but, you know, you do your part. You just burst bubbles. Dom, a little bubble bursting, perhaps. An op-ed at the Journal Sentinel today. And this one's got to leave Ron Johnson a little wanting. And they don't want Ron anymore. That is essentially my takeaway from the newest op-ed. Dom, I don't even have it in front of me. Do you?
I certainly do. The USA Network Wisconsin editorial board. Election deceiver, science fabulist, billionaire benefactor. After 12 years, it's time to turn term limit Senator Ron Johnson.
He obviously didn't have the courage to self-term limit, even though he told us.
He told us 6 years ago.
Oh, no, one more time, boys. That's it. That's it.
Wait, well, he's doing it for the country. I mean, where would we be without Ron Johnson? You know, and that's actually a fairly good question. I mean, how would your life be different if Ron Johnson was not your senator? Exactly. You
know? I think demonstrably better.
From the Milwaukee Journal editorial, he's an election falsifier who recklessly promoted lies about the 2020 president.
I'm sorry, Dom. I feel like we've lost you somehow. Like you're less important somehow to this show than you used to be. So there he is. No, you're back to being important. Somewhat important, a little bit important. But anyways, a very, let's call it very negative op-ed at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And, you know, there's some other trash talking out there. Another op-ed out there from James Widgerson. Fancy Brian, you remember that guy from Wright, Wisconsin? Bought out Charlie Sykes, apparently. And some had been less than complimentary of the man. I think some had hoped he'd die on a toilet. I think we've heard some mention of
that. On a toilet. He called me fat and said I was going to die on a toilet.
Yeah, that's what Dom said about the man.
No, that wasn't me. I think you were talking about somebody else. We never said anything like that. And
he
actually tried to engage.
He refused to come on this show because
he wanted some sort of apology first. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, you know, the former, that guy, just like Charlie Sykes in a way, you know, changing their stripes to some degree. But let's stay on point here just for a minute.
The
I want to get some
falsifier, Rojo.
Yes. He's also a science fabulist who suggested, without evidence, that the COVID-19 vaccines could make the pandemic worse, and who repeatedly touted unproven remedies for the disease from ivermectin to mouthwash. He's tried to rewrite the sword history of the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, claiming the attackers were people that love this country, that truly respect law enforcement, would never do anything to break the law, unquote. He suggested that government should rewrite the rules for the two government programs seniors rely on most, Medicare and Social Security, making them subject to annual political fights in Congress rather than mandatory payments as promised. For years, Ron Johnson has demonstrated that he should be retired to his family's seaside Florida home and not representing Wisconsin in the United States Senate. Voters should send him packing this November. And the editorial gives us 8 reasons. And, Crudy, I want to start out on one. Maybe we can do a little sharing here. Again, this is the Journal Sentinel editorial on Rojo. He wants to upend Medicare and Social Security. Johnson said recently that Medicare and Social Security should be subject to annual budget deliberations, which would be a drastic change for a pair of essential social insurance programs and could put them at risk. Americans pay into both programs and qualify for benefits when they reach retirement age. They are set up like insurance plans that offer a guaranteed benefit.
Ponzi scheme.
That's why they are treated by the government as mandatory spending. Treating them as discretionary spending would subject them to annual partisan squabbles and could put the guarantees promised to seniors at risk.
Well, that was the whole idea under the avocation of Rojo, but please continue, Tom.
Though there are legitimate concerns about future funding of both programs, neither is in imminent danger. Medicare is funded through 2028 and Social Security through 2035, according to government projections. In the past, Congress has been willing to work out solutions rather than continually blast campaign rhetoric. It has resolved funding problems without resorting to drastic steps.
Dominic, there's more. His office was involved in the Trump fake elector scheme. We've taken some issue here. Johnson's office, I would say Ron Johnson, was involved in an attempt to pass a document regarding the, air quotes, Wisconsin electors to then Vice President Mike Pence just minutes before Congress was to ceremonially certify the election on January 6th. Johnson's explanation for what happened and for what he knew and what his staff knew, well, Dom, they don't freaking add up. Trump and his lawyers were pushing a wild scheme to replace the authentic electors, the people selected based on, you know, votes, with sycophants who would flip the result in battleground states to Trump. That corrupt plan could have erased the choice made by voters and potentially handed the presidency to Trump if enough swing states flipped. Trump lost the popular vote by 7 million votes nationwide and the Electoral College 306 to 232. The Trump scheme was treasonous.
Oh, damn.
And my little editorialization, Dom, so was U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. I never knew that Ron Johnson was an insurrectionist, but now you do. Come back. We'll continue bashing him using the words of the editorial board at the Journal Sentinel. It's a hump day. That's what we do.
I don't feel like my time here has been particularly successful.
I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people.
Why don't you just leave me alone?
What the hell is wrong with you people?
He called me fat and said I was going to die on it.
The Devil's Advocates. Tackling the issues you're not allowed to talk about at the dinner table.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Make sure you stick around. Bottom of the hour, Charles Franklin, pollster extraordinaire from Marquette University Law School Polling, going to join us to go over the new numbers.
Dominic, we have been utilizing a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel editorial board opinion piece to sort of crap on our U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, because they do. Because it is deserved. I think you're up.
I think I'm up. They offer 8 reasons why we should retire Senator Ron Johnson. The first, of course, he wants to upend Medicare and Social Security. As Crudy mentioned, his office was involved in the Trump's fake elector scheme, which the editorial board describes that scheme as treasonous. So apparently Ron Johnson, you know, dipped his toe in the treasonous river for a few seconds, a couple of minutes, or perhaps an hour or more. Number 3, according to the Journal Sentinel editorial board, he refused to tell the truth about the 2020 presidential election. What, you got problems with that? Johnson spent weeks questioning the validity of the election, despite evidence showing conclusively that Biden won the presidency. He held a one-sided hearing, allowing Trump's lawyers to air allegations of fraud that had already been rejected by dozens of courtrooms across America, including both Republican and Democratic judges and even federal judges appointed by Trump. Johnson's role in amplifying lies about the election, including his threat to challenge the ceremonial counting of the electoral votes in Congress, encouraged other Trump supporters to believe the result could be overturned and contributed to the tragedy at the Capitol. On January 6th, Johnson did not vote against objections to Biden's victories in Arizona, Pennsylvania.
Well,
after
he knew he was guilty of sin because he was trying to hand off to Trump electors that morning.
Well, at that point, right. Until the insurrection, Johnson publicly stated he intended to vote in favor of challenges to state-certified votes. Johnson knew better. About 2 weeks after the election, he acknowledged that Biden had won the election, according to former Brown County Republican chairman. And in August of 2021, Johnson was recorded saying that Trump lost Wisconsin simply because he underperformed other Republicans on the same ballot in the same election. He didn't get 51,000 votes that other Republicans got, and that's why he lost, Johnson said. You might hear that on this station. Now Johnson refuses to say whether he would accept the outcome of the November election once the results are certified, the Wisconsin State Journal reports. We cannot elect people to office who do not honor the results of elections and still expect to hold on to our democratic republic. It's that simple. Even citizens who don't like his opponent should withhold their vote for Johnson at this point alone to ensure our government derives its power from the consent of the governed, to ensure, as Republican President Abraham Lincoln put it, that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from this earth.
It ain't the party of Lincoln anymore, Dom. A little bit more from this op-ed on Ron Johnson. He repeatedly downplayed the seriousness of the attack on the U.S. Capitol. Johnson claimed the rampage didn't seem like an armed insurrection. This was despite the fact that five people died. Writers called for deaths of Vice President Mike Pence and leaders of Congress. Weapons were found on the attackers and stashed nearby, and organized white nationalists led violent charges against the Capitol Police and forced their way into the building using flagpoles, bear spray, fire extinguishers, and other blunt objects as weapons. Johnson's a little bit of a blunt object sometimes. Johnson later said those who attacked the Capitol were people that love this country, that truly respect law enforcement, and would never do anything to break the law. If that wasn't bad enough, he added this racist remark. If the protesters had been, and here's the quote, Black Lives Matter and Antifa protesters, he said, I might have been a little concerned. With a wink and a nod, Johnson was voicing support for the white supremacists who led the attack on the Capitol. And it's worth noting, one of the people at the scene that day, a top lieutenant to the Proud Boys chairman, pled guilty last week to seditious conspiracy in connection with the riot at the Capitol. Stuart Rhodes and a lot of others, they're on trial right now, and it's not going so well.
Yes,
you know,
the
for
Oath
the
Keepers.
Patriots, as Ron would call them.
Yes, yes. Crudy, he also made sure his ultra-wealthy donors got a huge tax break. Johnson forced changes to 2017 Republican tax overhaul that benefited some of the nation's wealthiest people, including himself and his own donors. Apparently, Mike Crude as well. In 2021, ProPublica revealed how Wisconsin's Republican senator ensured donors got a massive tax break in a bill the party claimed was a middle-class tax cut. Thanks to Johnson's last-minute threat to vote against the legislation, a huge portion of its billions in savings ended up going to just 82 of America's wealthiest families. Three of the senator's top donors, billionaires Diane Hendricks and Dick and Liz Uline, were on the short list of those who gained the most. ProPublica reported that the tax break Johnson muscled through could deliver more than $500 million in tax savings for the Hendricks and the Ulines over its eight-year life. And now, as Johnson comes under criticism during his reelection campaign for leveraging a tax break for the uber-wealthy who need it least, he accuses his critics of class envy. Hendricks and Ulines continue to invest in Johnson, funding attack ads against the challenger, Democrat Mandela Barnes.
Dominic Moron Roadshow, he has displayed a stunning lack of interest in creating jobs in the state he represents. I'd hardly say he represents us, Dom, but after Oshkosh Corporation said in June it intended to make vehicles for the U.S. Postal Service at a new facility in Spartanburg, South Carolina, U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin and others stepped in to try and bring those 1,000 jobs to Wisconsin. Man, I think Rojo might read this better than I'm doing. A little bit more. It's not like we don't have enough jobs here in Wisconsin, Johnson said. He said the company was best suited to decide where it located the jobs. I wouldn't insert myself to demand that anything be manufactured here using federal funds in Wisconsin.
Crudy, he's a super spreader of disinformation during the pandemic and also a climate change denier. But here's the bottom line. You'll notice Johnson is not touting a long record of accomplishments in his ads for re-election. Instead, he and his supporters have attacked his opponent. A black man is different and dangerous. So what has Johnson delivered for Wisconsin in 12 years? Well, a tax cut that he blocked until was amended to deliver enormous tax breaks to his donors. We talked about that. In 2018, a right to try bill that allows terminally ill patients to try experimental treatments not yet approved by the US FDA. In fact, Ron Johnson is the worst political representative since the infamous Senator Joe McCarthy.
Well said. Come back and find guest Charles Franklin Marquette, University Law School pollster. More Devils.
The mood of the crowd was positive and festive.
I stabbed a man in the heart.
You know, I was not involved in this at all.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Hump Day Edition. Finest of guests have joined us. He is Charles Franklin. He is the pollster, Marquette University Law School poll. And Charles, I always get a little giddy when you drop polling, man. Welcome back.
Hey, Charles.
I love to entertain you both, you know?
Well, you often...
What I live for.
You often do, Charles. And I got to admit, a little perplexed by the polling today. But let's go inside the numbers. First and foremost, top line numbers. How's the U.S. Senate race going? I understand Ron Johnson has catapulted to the lead.
Well, I would say he's continued to expand movement in his direction. It's a 6-point Johnson lead at this point, 52-46 for Mandela Barnes. It was a 1-point Johnson lead a month ago, but it was a 7-point Barnes lead the month before that. And so we have seen a pretty steady shift there from +7 for Barnes to +1 for Johnson to now +6 for Johnson. We also have one other good poll for comparison. In August, Fox News had Barnes by 4, and in their poll a couple of weeks ago, they had Johnson by 4. So you're seeing the same kind of movement across two different polls comparing August with at least late September, early October.
Charles, I didn't note yet in your polling, but I've noted in a couple of the recent polls, it seems like the biggest turn against Barnes has been the independent voters here in the state of Wisconsin. And you and I have speculated, maybe it's some of the negative ads that Johnson and his allies have played. Is that essentially true, and is it played out through today's polling?
It's absolutely true that most of the shifts we see are because independents were 15 points more for Barnes than Johnson in August, but then that tightened to about even in September, and now Johnson has a little bit of a lead with independents. So all of the movement, or almost all of the movement, is there with those folks. The partisans are still over 90-95% lined up behind their candidates. So it's not party crossover. It's movement among the independents. And the reason to believe that it has something to do with the ad campaign is that in August, 41% of people said they didn't know enough about Mandela Barnes to have an opinion of him. Those with an opinion were overwhelmingly positive to him. But in the time since then, his unfavorable ratings have gone from 16% unfavorable to 40% unfavorable now. It's hard not to see that as being a result of the ad campaigns run against him.
Charles, before I let my little buddy in, let me ask you the perplexing part as I saw it. We've got comparisons between Mandela Barnes and Ron Johnson amongst likely voters. If I understand it, we have it amongst registered voters. And then perhaps even, I don't want to characterize them as low propensity voters, but those that are just not quite sure who they're going to vote for, if they're going to vote at all. And there was a dramatic difference in those metrics. Can you please explain, sir?
Yes, and that's really important. All along, we show you an electorate composed of everybody, all registered voters. Now, we'll never have that kind of turnout, but that's the sort of extreme that we could have for super high turnout. In that comparison, the Senate race is actually tied. But then you look at people who are absolutely certain to vote and the people who say, I'm pretty likely to vote. There, Johnson opens up a small lead. And finally, when you look at only those people who are absolutely certain to vote, that's who we usually consider likely voters. That's where Johnson has the 6-point lead. But the gap doesn't come because Democrats are more or less likely to turn out. What the gap comes is that the voters who are only somewhat likely to vote, less than certain to vote, there, Johnson support falls 20 points compared to where it is with those certain to vote. And so while Barnes's support actually goes up just a little bit with those folks. So you can see that the difference here between likely and registered voters is because the preferences of people a little bit less likely to vote are dramatically worse for Johnson than the preferences of those voters who are absolutely certain. Now, part of that is less likely voters are folks that don't live and breathe politics as hard as it is to believe there's anybody like that. And so there is less involvement in politics with those folks that are a bit less likely to vote. They may become more likely to vote. They could also change their minds between now and election day. But I think it clearly shows that if turnout rises and brings some people to the polls that we're not really sure would vote, that would be beneficial to the Barnes campaign and also to the Evers campaign.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Charles Franklin, pollster extraordinaire for the Marquette University Law School polling. So turnout, if the takeaway for the Democrats, if they want Evers and Barnes, they've got to go out and turn off that vote. And for Republicans, they need to suppress the vote. And that would benefit both parties. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's in the ballpark. You know, the issue is not to turn up voters who have never voted in their life. That's almost impossible. But converting the folks who are a little tangentially involved, people who voted in 2020 or 2018, but might not be sure they'll vote this time, those are the targets that actually both campaigns are working hard to reach.
Let's talk about some of the issues specifically. Abortion. I know this is going to be a big one. I know Mandela Barnes is running on this specifically, trying to turn the page on some of the ads that are coming at him from the Johnson and his allies. What did you find in the abortion issue?
Yeah, this is a good issue for Barnes and for Democrats generally. Over 60% of the state oppose overturning Roe versus Wade. It's about 35% that favor doing that. That's not much changed from the summer. We've seen more than 60% opposed to that decision. So, you know, if that was the only issue people were voting on, we'd see 60% plus on one side. We, of course, don't see that. We also see over 80% think there should at least be an exception for rape and incest. And that includes over 70% of Republicans. I think right there in those two numbers goes a long ways to explaining why Tim Michaels has shifted his position on abortion law and why Ron Johnson is suddenly a fan of referenda and is proposing a referendum on the issue. Of course, the Republican legislature refused to take up the possibility of referenda just a week ago.
Well, I'm going to encourage you, Charles Franklin, to poll on that question some point in the future, you know, post-election. But let's talk about the other big race, the other top of the ticket. Of course, that is the Tim Michaels, Governor Tony Evers race. And what are the electorate saying, at least per the snapshot polling?
Well, this one's much tighter than the Senate race. And while it's trended a little bit, it hasn't trended nearly as much. It's a 47 Evers, 46 Michaels among likely voters. In September, it was a 3-point Evers lead, and in August, a 4-point Evers lead. So you do see this trend away from the Democrat towards the Republican, but with Evers still just a shade ahead of Michaels this time. And most of that change is just like in the Senate race, coming from independents, but independents who haven't shifted as much over the course of these 3 months. Part of that is anchored by an incumbent, Governor Evers, who's pretty well known compared to Tim Michaels. But we are seeing some shifts in that race. And again, if turnout were high, Evers would go up to a 5-point lead. If turnout is just what we think of as likely voters, then it's a 1-point margin.
Now, Charles, in the last elective cycle, in 2018, last midterm elective cycle, my memory says that Tammy Baldwin outperformed all candidates. She got about 100,000 votes that mathematically overlapped with Scott Walker, ticket splitters effectively. And Walker, of course, was the incumbent. And despite that, Walker was defeated, obviously, by Tony Evers, but by a much slimmer margin. And Charles, you know, it calls for speculation, sir, but is it possible we could see a Democratic, you know, let's say gubernatorial outcome and a Republican senatorial outcome? I got colleagues here at the office that say, you know, the two incumbents are going to win re-election. Yeah. And, you know, they blew $300 million all for naught.
Yeah. I think especially if the governor's race is anything like as close as we're seeing it now, it'd be just really easy to see two different winners. How much crossover there is more of an open question. I think Tammy Baldwin in 2018 is a very strong candidate statewide, and she won in areas of the state that you don't usually see Democrats winning, or at least she made inroads in some pretty Republican areas. There's also the question of voter drop-off between the races, though I'd be surprised if that's a big factor this time. But Baldwin in 18 is good proof that you really can still have lopsided elections in Wisconsin with the right candidates, the right issues, and the right moment.
Charles, Scott Walker is still blaming legalized marijuana referendums for his loss in 2018. Now, you know, and we really appreciate when you ask the question, when you update us on the, you know, the attitudes of Wisconsinites on the legalized marijuana question. We think it's pertinent. Charles, what are the folks saying?
Yeah, they're in favor of legalizing marijuana. Woo-hoo! And have been for a while. Back in 2014, it was 42% in favor of legalization, 52% opposed. But now it's over 60% in favor. So there's been a real shift in opinion about this. And it's been a pretty fast shift over that, 8 years or so between 14 and now. We see majorities, big majorities of independents and Democrats in favor of legalization. Republicans are more evenly split. This time, they're a little more opposed than in favor. But in our previous poll, they were about evenly split. So I'd say there's still a little shuffling there. Though the issue has now come up in the governor's race, and the two candidates have taken different positions. So it's also possible that Republican voters, seeing their nominee oppose legalization, have shifted just a little bit more opposed. Nevertheless, the trend across all three partisan groups is clearly towards the legalization side, with big majorities in independents and Democrats.
Charles Franklin, Marquette University Law School polling. You ask about some issues, inflation, public schools, gun violence, the like. I want to go through that list briefly if we can. And we've heard a lot of people talk about, you know, democracy being on the ballot. Did you broach that topic on these issues?
Well, we did ask about how concerned are you about ensuring an accurate vote count. That finishes fifth out of nine issues in terms of how highly people rank it. Though 72% of Republicans ranked it high. Among independents, it's 55%. Among Democrats, just 30%. So there is a gap there. And that also lines up with another question we ask about whether you think the 2020 vote was accurately counted, where roughly two-thirds of Republicans have doubts about it, whereas two-thirds of the public overall and two-thirds of independents are very confident in the outcome of that election. So whether you frame it in terms of an accurate vote count and concern about it or beliefs about 2020, you see this pretty sharp partisan divide. Now, if we asked a different question, there are plenty of Democrats worried about the future of democracy. What I've not figured out how to do is frame a question that both sides can respond to, again, because they see it in such different lights through such different lenses.
Charles, we're all out of time, man. Can't wait to speak with you on Friday. We got your book for Friday, the extended coverage, right up into the singular WBA gubernatorial debate between Tim Michaels and, of course, Tony Evers. Charles, look forward to having you back on Friday. Always appreciate you coming around with some new polling for us, sir.
Thank you, Charles.
Thanks. Look forward to it. Take care.
Come back. More Devil's Advocates. We'll take a few calls, and then we'll bring on the CEO of Civic Media, Sage Weil, talking about expansion and maybe dark money.
I don't care about those people, man. I could care less what they think.
I don't know, but I'm suspicious.
How you doing, Brady?
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Going to the phone shortly at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, want to thank our most recent guest, pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin Marquette University Law School poll. I am quite flummoxed, though, about the difference when you talk about the engagement level. Those that say, I'm very likely to vote. Ron Johnson's what? Tied? And if you look at registered voters, he's up by 6. But if you look at those that aren't quite clear, and maybe I'm confusing those two numbers, but then Mandela Barnes is up by 20?
Yeah.
Can all of these be correct? I mean,
yes,
I feel
like
somebody
says exactly, that's exactly what they're saying. The less likely to vote people favor Mandela Barnes by 20 points.
Well, that's always been the problem for the Democrats, is turning theirs out in the midterm years. It's a lot easier when there's a president on the ballot, right? And you think democracy's on the ballot when Donald Trump was on the ballot. 81 million people turned out in 2020. And if we get that sort of record turnout, it would seem quite clear to me that Tony Evers will win re-election. He'll be the goalie for 4 more years. And of course, Mandela Barnes could change the mathematical outcome of the U.S. Senate, but only if we can get Democrats off their dead asses. You know, maybe I'll vote. Maybe, you know, if I don't have to wash my hair that day. 844-967-2789. Dom, let's get to the phones.
Then you're definitely voting, Curdy. I know this for a fact.
Oh, I've always got time. Washing my hair hardly ever takes me, you know, very long. More like shining my head. Sharky from Racine. Welcome, Sharky. What do you got for us?
Hi, Sharky.
Hey, guys. Man, hi, you guys. I tell you what, I've been test driving you now for a couple of weeks and listening to you. And I want you to know, first of all, I commend you for the product you're bringing. I hope you could bring somebody, get your radio station down here, too, so we can revitalize these Racine people and get them to get their heads out of the backsides. But I tell you, you know, hearing Franklin talk, that's inspiring. To hear you guys put it out there, you give me more spirit than the I've lost a lot of it over the years. I spent 40 plus years in law enforcement in the legal field. I've also been an observer election observer, which is the official term. And I've done it for 40 years. So I use my little techniques I learned over all these years to watch all this stuff. But that's just my little contribution and my volunteerism. But I don't want to call this station and bore you to death with some old music about Mr. Rojo. I'm concerned that not enough ever was made of the situation with Ron Johnson's. His one of his workers was a staffer, a high level staffer for the U.S. Senator. And on one particular...
A false Trump elector. Is that the one you're talking about?
No. We're going back a little bit further where it got pretty spicy. It was 2014. And his staffer, actually, they were at a function in Muskego, Wisconsin. And it was a political function. And there was a situation where his staffer was molested by a state legislator. Mm.
I recall the circumstance. Yeah.
Yes, and that got pretty ugly, but Ron Johnson failed to notify authorities. They kept it real quiet. They even said that the Capitol legislator personnel weren't even aware of the complaint. So they kind of buried along, and I couldn't possibly believe that the GOP didn't get wind of this. It was so bad, though. Here's the first click on that whole thing. It was terrible, terrible what happened to the staffer. But what do? They like I say, they keep it quiet, and then the state legislator, a guy by the name of Bill Cramer, is the molester, okay? And alleged molester at this point. So Bill Cramer kind of slid through, didn't take any hits from his own people in the capital of Wisconsin, and they promote him to majority leader. They promoted him, and I'm thinking, how does that work? You molest and you get away with it, and now you're the majority leader. So,
well, he promised to do better, Sharky. Bill Cramer promised to do better, like all Republicans do. They confess their sins, and, you know, they say, next time I'll be better. Only people don't usually change their character. And the next time Bill Cramer got hammer drunk, he was molesting another lobbyist, I believe it was, on a flight to D.C. And I was actually, I don't know if Dom was with me that day. Memory gets a little fuzzy after 8 years. But I was in the caucus the day that Bill Cramer was kicked out. The only time I have ever been allowed in a Republican caucus meeting in the Wisconsin State Capitol. And they publicly threw him out. But... Sharky, you'd probably believe this. The Republicans, they did so by anonymous ballot, and they didn't actually give us a numerical count. They didn't want us to know how many were for or against the expelling of the majority leader from their caucus, the assembly. And, of course, he was an alleged abuser of one of Ron Johnson's staffers. And if I remember the excuse made by your buddy Ron Johnson, Dom, why he didn't make notice to anyone... Well, you know, he said it was the woman's decision. And she didn't want to make a fuss out of it.
Lots of reasons not to vote for Ron Johnson.
Of sexual assault don't want to make a big public fuss out of things because they feel like they'd be personally embarrassed. But let's say a U.S. senator, if he had her back, maybe if he made the allegation claim, well, you think Ron had the courage to stand up and do that? No. No, the answer is no. Thanks for reminding us, Sharky. I had forgotten all about that sordid pass of Ron Johnson.
Thank you, Sharky.
844-967-2789. Short on time this hour, but one of our little conservative love muffins, Nick from Madison. Welcome back, Nick.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, thank you for taking me at the last part of the hour, but I appreciate it. Here's what I'm worried about. You know, I'm a conservative. I don't like being gaslit. I think Republicans are gaslighting me. Democrats are gaslighting me. You guys are gaslighting me. And
wait, what? How exactly are we gaslighting you? Come on, man. You got to lay it out for me, brother. You can't say that and not identify it.
I'm about to.
All right, go. Go.
Okay. Joe Biden is, I have eyes to see, ears to hear, a doddering old man. He is not fit to be president of the United States.
Compared to Trump?
Yes. No, okay. But Trump, that's not a good
but he was the most recent example. And
yeah,
he was
that's
the
all
opponent.
Fine and dandy, but I'm more concerned about, Nick, how you claim that we are gaslighting. You haven't specified that yet.
Did we say he was...
No, I just did. Because on this channel that... No, he's a great president. No, he's not.
Nick, you got to make a stronger plea.
That's not gaslighting, man. I tell you what, I will take Biden with every fault. If you, Nick, and all the conservatives place upon him, other than over a guy like Trump, any day and twice on Sundays, man.
Come back, hour two, Sage Weil, CEO of Civic Media, talking about a big expansion across the state of Wisconsin.
On the internet, you can find all sorts of people saying different things.
We the people sucks and it's dead and buried.
People against goodness and normalcy.
So many people are walking around now without legs and without...